Recording, morning of December 13th, for talk at New York Hilton Elliott Corday Symposium. I'm pleased to join in this symposium honoring Elliott Corday, having long admired his very distinguished contributions to medicine in the clinic and the laboratory, in professional education, and in the politics of health. His thoughts and observations over recent years have led him to a real concern. This concern is that we are, as a profession, diverting our energies to uncertain pragmatism, to unproved empiricism, to mass interventions on collective behavior, and away from the patient and profound and plodding pursuit of truth, using the traditional tools of the physician and scientist, clinical, pathological, and laboratory investigation. He is concerned that we'll come up short with discredit to the profession. I admire and respect this feeling and this evaluation. I'm privileged to take issue with some of the observations and some of the concepts that I think have led Elliott Corday to this view. I'm pleased to maintain that good empiricism, good applied science, is crucial, is essential to the potential for preventing ischemic heart disease. Now, in a perfect world, each of us would do our best here to review the pros and cons, to review the literature objectively, and to synthesize a balanced overview of the questions and the status of ischemic heart disease. We live in an imperfect world in which rather we use the method of advocacy, and we hope that those who hear our views will reason, or at least will rearrange temporarily their prejudices and make good use of the adversarial approach. Unfortunately, advocacy comes from convictions, and convictions, as Nietzsche has said, are among the more dangerous, foes of truth than are lies. The great strength of our system, I feel, lies in the tremendous flow of ideas and innovation in our society medically, and the great openness of expression that we have in our chances of working effectively in many disciplines, and our opportunities to read and quote and challenge each other. Today, very briefly, I want to touch on some of the major controversies in the area of ischemic heart disease, and we can only touch on them superficially, including diet, hypertension, smoking, activity, stress, heredity, and more importantly, to enumerate one or two professional attitudes, professional approaches that I think are responsible for unnecessary controversy and which influence, to a great extent, cardiological thought, training, research, and practice. I have a short series of four didactic slides, which we'll run through very quickly. As a preliminary to considering these controversies on the idiopathogenesis and possible prevention of ischemic heart disease. In this first slide, I simply want to indicate to you what I feel is the balance of medical disciplines involved in exploring these questions. We're all traditionally involved in the clinical pathological process. Some of us have been trained and experienced in laboratory experimental methodology. Far fewer of us have experience in looking at problems using epidemiological science as the basic discipline of preventive medicine and using the population outside hospital in the real world as our laboratory. I simply want to indicate here that each of these three disciplines provides a methodology for the study of disease. All are necessary for the full understanding of the scope of disease, and information from each is complementary to the other. None is superior to the other, though admittedly most of our inspiration comes from observations made on the clinical pathological side. Now, as a background for discussing these controversies about prevention of ischemic heart disease, I feel it is necessary to establish an attitude of the necessity of prevention based on facts that we're dealing with end-stage disease, that our function as physicians is largely emergent, palliative, and supportive, and we're concerned with end-stage processes. And I'd like to do this in three slides as follows. The first, some of you have seen, provides guesstimates about the first-year mortality from a first myocardial infarction. And we see here the standard figure that most of us, my generation and older, recall as the accepted figure for mortality in acute myocardial infarction, 25%. This, of course, was not the mortality for first myocardial infarction. This was the hospital mortality. The pre-hospital mortality was something on the order of 25%. The post-hospital mortality during the first year after first myocardial infarction was something on the order of 10%, and the true mortality was something on the order of 60%. We're now in a more enlightened era of the coronary care unit. You know what has happened to the hospital mortality, significant reduction. 10 years hence, in that fateful year 1984, what might we expect? I've given a very optimistic estimate here of the potential for reduction of pre-hospital mortality with a profession highly skilled and devoted, with a public educated, with emergency facilities and the technology of pre-coronary care. Assuming that by various assist and supportive and stabilizing devices, we will continue to make progress on the in-hospital situation, and that we might thereby reduce the first year myocardial infarction death rate another 10%, from 50 to 45% in the next decade. Excellent. Particularly for those of us who might be stricken, an important step, but hardly a giant leap for mankind. The next slide has to do with the long-term excess mortality from coronary disease, which, as we can see here, persists even 10 years following survival. And the last slide of this series has to do with the life expectancy at the turn of the century, and now showing that, having reached adult ages, there is very little improvement in our life expectancy. Indeed, whatever we have gained by affluence and medical advances has been replaced by something else, and we believe that something else is ischemic heart disease or the atherosclerotic diseases. Now, with this background, We, of course, remain hopeful and supportive in the individual case. We must become more realistic in terms of what we can do in prolonging life in coronary disease, and we must be distinctly pessimistic in terms of making major inroads on the burden to society of coronary disease by conventional supportive therapeutic medicine.